Chapter 42 Dalinar 3 The 20 dueling forms were ancient, older even than most shard blades. Formalized lore, taught to students just after they began training with the sword, explained that Kanaran dueling had been developed by the heralds themselves. Nael Illyn, the finest duelist of the 10, was said to have set up the system as a way for men to prepare for the coming of the Storm Shades by fighting and training without fracturing the epic kingdoms through war. Dueling was the first and primary masculine noble art. All lords were expected to learn its secrets, and so Dalinar trained. Sparring was familiar, the one great constant in his life. Brothers, wives, and children might die, monasteries and their morals might have to be left behind for war, but there was always the duel. Peace or strife, ill temper or good, Dalinar always took the opportunity to spar, even if it refused to calm him as it once had. Brother Mazinchal fought with blade and plate, one of three prized sets owned by Shieldhome. Mazinchal was good. He fought with a subtle variation of garnet form, 3rd century Denise line, if Dalinar remembered correctly. Garnet was a solid, straightforward form that focused on single-hit wins. Mazinchal was more defensive than most garnets, however, mixing a bit of obsidian in for misdirection. It made for a fine combination, one that Dalinar had always respected. The sparring did not last long. Bouts against garnets never did. Dalinar won, scoring a second blunted strike against Mazinchal's shoulder. At the end, Mazinchal removed his helm, waving for a young monk to bring them water.
"That's 3 out of 4, my lord,"
the monk noted as he sipped from the ladle. He was a husky man with powerful legs and a surprising quickness about him. Like most birth-given monks, he bore no scars from true battle, but that was no reason to presume him inexperienced.
"The winds favor me today," Dalinar said simply.
Mazinchal shook his head.
"One wonders if you even benefit from sparring here any more, my lord. I can beat 9 out of 10 topazes. Garnet is strong against it, you know. But you..."
Dalinar accepted the ladle, not responding. Garnet was strong against topaz, true. The first focused on quick, explosive kills, the latter on endurance and precision. Garnet was a form for duels. Topaz was a form for the warrior who expected to fight a half-10-set different duels on the battlefield, bouts waged beneath a hot sun with spearmen waiting to attack the victor.
"If I may be so forward, my lord," the monk noted,
waving the young water carrier away,
"you are as fine a master as this monastery has ever known. Perhaps you should consider taking students."
"Perhaps when better days come, Brother Mazinchal," Dalinar said.
"Ah,"
the monk said, bowing his head.
"Forgive me, my lord. I momentarily forgot your distractions."
Dalinar waved dismissively, indicating that Mazinchal forget the supposed offense. The monk bowed and retreated, allowing 2 younger monks to remove his plate so it could be used by another. Dalinar stood in the sun, sweat from the sparring rolling down his cheek. Mazinchal's comment was the closest anyone had come to mentioning Arador's disappearance since the discovery 5 days before. Monks and lords alike stepped softly around Dalinar, none wishing to acknowledge his shame. Dalinar wished such a luxury upon himself. Arador's betrayal, and that's how Dalinar had to regard it as a betrayal, had undermined whatever authority Dalinar had hoped to maintain through neutrality. How did it look for a lord to make a command, only to have his own heir flagrantly disobey? Even worse than the political embarrassment, however, were the other repercussions, punishments that must fall as soon as Arador returned. Did the boy realize the position in which he had placed his own father? For Dalinar to keep his oath, an oath made before an official emissary of the king, he would have to disinherit his own son. Dalinar closed his eyes, sighing quietly to himself. And who did that leave? Renarin? Openly stripped of his blade by the king? Dalinar had no illusions about Renarin's reputation. Dalinar's tribute lords and shard-bearers would undoubtedly follow the boy out of loyalty to Dalinar's memory, but such loyalty dulled over time. It was not a good foundation for rule. Perhaps, once the shame of his act was forgotten, Arador could be reinstated. It was unlikely, however, that the lords would forget recent events. In their minds, Arador would be forever the boy who had ignored his father's command. How could Arador command their oaths when he himself had so flagrantly broken his own? Not for the first time, Dalinar wished for Shannaras's calm, understanding counsel. The boy would have made a wonderful lord, far better than his father. Shannaras had been able to make peace without creating enemies, and could give commands that men followed out of desire, not just duty. Another monk was stepping forward to spar. They knew that Dalinar liked to vary his opponents. Dalinar stretched his hand to the side to begin summoning his blade, but paused. A litter was approaching the monastery. It was constructed of fine dark wood and laced with light pink sea silk, and the bearers wore Dalinar's own insignia. He made a motion to his sparring partner, and the man stepped back, nodding deferentially as Dalinar strode across the sands to meet Kanay. She rarely visited him during his sparring time. Though he had never forbidden her, Kanay somehow sensed that Dalinar saw the monastery as a place of refuge, escape. And, despite her innocence, she obviously knew that he found her one of the things from which he needed that escape. The litter-bearers stopped near the entrance to the monastery, where several of Dalinar's attendants stood, waiting for commands or messages. The bearers lowered the litter, and Kanay stepped out, swathed in regal sea silks suited to a more mature woman. She glanced uncomfortably around the grounds, where monks had stopped their sparring to regard their future lady.
"My lord," Kanay said in her formal voice, "we just got a messenger who says that my father is coming to Kolinar."
"Your father?" Dalinar asked with surprise. "How many days away is he?"
"Not days, my lord," Kanay said. "The messenger said he'd be here within the hour."
Dalinar gritted his teeth so the men wouldn't hear him curse. Lord Achathan of Cardinar was a fine man and an excellent battlefield commander, but he despised being fussed over. He often complained that he'd rather eat with his men than dine at a regal feast, and absolutely loathed protracted ceremonies. He was, Dalinar reflected, much as Dalinar himself would be had he not been forced to grow up as a brother and uncle to kings.
"Gather my shard-bearers," Dalinar commanded one of his attendants. "Pull them from baths and dining if necessary. I want at least a 10th set of them there to greet Lord Achathan."
He pointed at another man.
"Order the cooks to prepare for a feast. Simple food, without much garnish."
A third man.
"Warn Lord Valin of Achathan's arrival. He'll know what other arrangements to make."
Dalinar had learned early in his career that he needed a good palace steward to care for the details of pageantry that most nobility expected of a Partian.
"My lord," Kanay said under her breath, "I need to talk to you where others can't hear. Fast."
Dalinar paused. Kanay was getting better at femininely masking her emotions, though how she was learning such things without being someone's ward was beyond him. However, now that she had spoken, he could see the barely contained urgency in her eyes. She could have sent a messenger to bring him word of her father's impending arrival, yet she had found it necessary to come herself. Whatever she wished to tell him, it was important to her. Dalinar made a few more commands, then stepped back a few paces, waving Kanay forward so that they could speak in private.
"Is this about your father, Kanay?" Dalinar asked quietly.
"No, my lord,"
she said, glancing nervously back at the attendants and monks.
"It's about your son."
"Arador?"
Dalinar asked with surprise.
"No, my lord. Renarin. I think he's going to sneak off to the war, too."
"What?"
Delinar asked incredulously. Kanay shied back at the outburst, looking down and flushing. Delinar controlled himself.
Don't overreact, he thought. This is Renarin she is speaking of. The boy wouldn't do such a thing. His wind's cursed unassertiveness might be annoying, but it usually keeps him out of trouble.
Kanay, he said calmly, what made you think such a thing?
I heard him talking, my lord, she replied in a small voice, with Lord Merrin. They were in the Lord Renarin's room. I was passing in the hallway, so I listened to them. Lord Merrin said, we have to go after him. Lord Renarin said, we can't, my father will be angry. Then Lord Merrin said, we have no choice. We can't let your brother die alone.
Delinar stewed, grinding his teeth.
They couldn't possibly. But they could.
Merrin still didn't know the ways of nobility, and Delinar knew that he and Arador had become good friends. Renarin had always idolized his older brother. If Merrin put it into his head that they should go...
I'll check on it, Delinar said stiffly. You did well by bringing this to me, Kanay.
The girl looked up, smiling at the encouragement as Delinar waved her back to her litter. He sent no messenger. As the Kolinar Palace shuffled and spun with servants preparing for a distinguished visitor, Delinar himself went to check on Renarin. The boy was not in his rooms. When Delinar found Merrin absent as well, he began to worry. He didn't admit the truth, however, until he visited the stables and found that Renarin had requisitioned two of Delinar's swifter horses not an hour before. Apparently, Renarin had told the stable hands that Delinar wanted him to ride out and meet Lord Echothan and escort him to the palace. Delinar forced himself to remain quiet about the disappearance. Even when Lord Echothan's party arrived with no Renarin as an escort, Delinar hoped that perhaps the boys would see their foolishness and return on their own. If they did so, he would be spared punishing them. Surely Renarin would realize the stupidity of joining the war effort. He was no fighter. But Merrin was. Delinar had known so many young men like him. Most noble, but boys were the same regardless of parentage. Merrin was eager to prove himself. Twice he had saved the king's life, both times by fighting when no one expected him to. He would assume himself immune to reprimand. Would think that this time, like before, he would somehow find a way to do what everyone assumed he could not. Delinar kept his anger in check even as he stepped forward to greet Kanay's father. Third Lord Echothan was a man who could have been a king, both in bearing and in lineage. His city, Cardinar, had been mostly independent of Alethkar since the turn of the century. Made wealthy by grand sapphire mines and trade through its calm bays set at the very end of the Kolinar Late, the city had been close to declaring itself a separate kingdom until Nolinaran's firm defense against the invader Jarna. Delinar still remembered a young Echothan riding with his father to join against the invasion, defending a common border despite internal disputes. When Echothan himself had inherited a short time later, Nolinaran had been quick to gain the young lord's loyalty, folding Cardinar back into Alethkar without sword or spear. Echothan bowed deeply before Delinar.
"Greetings, my Parshan," he said.
He had changed little since those days. He had lost most of his hair, and now shaved off the rest, and time had added some creases to the face, but he was still the stark and eager warrior who had ridden at Delinar's side during the Jarna War. Delinar forced a smile to his face.
"You needn't prostrate yourself so, old friend. Come, I've ordered a feast to refresh you from your journey."
Echothan stood, smiling, then turned to regard Delinar's 14 shardbearers, all in plate, who stood at the head of a quarter-ten squad of soldiers, all saluting. Delinar had avoided anything too dramatic, no thrown flower petals, no trumpeters or heralds. Just the soldiers greeting one of their own. This, however, still proved too much ceremony for the aging Echothan.
I see I gave you too much warning again, Itchothan said with a wry grumble. I'll have to try and find slower horses for my messengers.
Dalinar chuckled, despite himself, turning and letting Itchothan greet Kanay. Again the man bowed. Through betrothal, his own daughter's rank had been elevated beyond his own. She held herself well, all things considered.
We have prepared rooms for yourself and your men, my lord, she said. Please make use of them. We shall begin the feast whenever you feel prepared.
A slight discomfort flashed in Itchothan's eyes.
Thank you, my lady, he said.
He turned, waving his group, mostly nobility from the looks of them, to follow Dalinar's attendants to their rooms. Dalinar fled to his balcony again. He stared out over the darkening lake, listening to the lingering sounds of feasting below. He had retired at a distinguished time, leaving the younger men to their revelries, though he doubted many of them would enjoy themselves as they would at another lord's palace. Dalinar's thoughts on drinking and gluttony were well known. Below, a group of dark-cloaked men galloped from the stables, torches held high in the night as they rode on their lord's business. Dalinar could no longer wait for Meran and Renarin to return. Rumors were already spreading. The stable hands had spoken of the missing horses and the lordlings who had not returned in Itchothan's party. By dawn, most of Kolinar would know that Dalinar's second and final son had betrayed him as well. This time, at least, Dalinar could deny the rumors. Renarin had told no one of his leaving and had given no explanation. Assuming Dalinar's men caught them before they arrived at the war, there might be something he could do for the boys. The late cliffs were strange dark mountains in the waning light. Dalinar sighed, suddenly feeling so very old. A sound came from behind. Dalinar turned to find Lord Itchothan, tall and broad-chested, standing at the doorway to his balcony. Dalinar waved him forward. Itchothan stepped up to the stone railing, resting arms on its top, a glass of wine held loosely in one hand.
"You look northeast," he noted, "toward Crossguard." "I look northeast," Dalinar agreed, "and consider the idiocy of youth." Itchothan smiled. "We were idiots too, once." "I sometimes wonder if we still aren't," Dalinar said quietly. Itchothan snorted. "You'll notice the men I brought with me," he said. Dalinar nodded. He had noticed. No ladies, only lords. Very strange for a supposed social visit. They were Itchothan's most powerful tribute lords and neighbors. All of them, like a surprisingly large percentage of the Aleth nobility, had declared themselves neutral in Elokar's bickering with Jezenrosh. Dalinar's refusal to take sides had made them bold. "Many men think Elokar acts presumptuously," Itchothan said simply. "Those are treasonous words, old friend," Dalinar said. "It seems our country breeds treasonous words lately," Itchothan replied. "Some wonder when the fighting will stop. They wonder if we were justified in invading Prala. They wonder if their king has become the same kind of tyrant we fought so hard to defeat 2 decades ago." "Pralir harbored the traitor," Dalinar said simply. "And so we invaded," Itchothan replied. "Without diplomacy, without asking for a trial of our king's murderer. We attacked within months of his flight." Dalinar frowned.
"If there are those who say such things," he noted, "one wonders why they didn't join with Jezenrosh."
"Because Jezenrosh is no better,"
Itchothan said, sipping his wine.
"The king is wrong to attack his countrymen, but he was right to be wary. Surely you've heard of the way Jezenrosh courted the nobility in Elokar's absence. Besides, Jezenrosh is no leader. Even those who follow him don't give him much respect. The boy's too eccentric, and he has little skill in battle command. Men like him just fine, but they don't want him as their king."
"I don't see where this is going," Dalinar said wearily.
don't you? Ichothan asked. Dalinar, there are many who whisper that a new leader is needed.
And that leader is not Jezzan Rosh.
They need a king they trust. A king respected, like no man in Alethkar.
Dalinar leaned against the stone rail, feeling a cool wind call through the late, ruffling his clothing.
Ichothan, I am his portion. I will not betray my king.
Ichothan didn't answer immediately.
No,
he finally said.
I guess I didn't really think you would. Just know this. When Elikar came to us 3 years ago, paranoid that Cardinar would rebel at the old king's death and offered us his silly treaty, we did not accept it for him. He suggested Kane for one of his fops. It was I who insisted it be you. I know you've never liked the betrothal, Dalinar, but it was necessary.
He paused, then lay a hand on Dalinar's shoulder.
Cardinar is loyal to the tyrant Bane. If he rides to arms, then so shall we. There are others who would follow as well.
With that, Ichothan left him, and Dalinar bowed his head before the wind, hoping that the Almighty was in its whispers, for he could certainly use some direction.